This past week, the spotlight in the church has been focused on young people, with global coverage of Pope Benedict attending the World Youth Day celebrations in Sydney, Australia. Billed as the largest youth event in the world, hundreds of thousands of young pilgrims from around 170 different countries flocked to Sydney for the six-day gathering. But those young pilgrims can count themselves lucky that they were able to make the trip to Sydney, because let's not forget that around 80% of the world's youth live on less than $2 a day and could never afford such an experience or find a sponsor. And when poverty is teamed with conflict in one's home country, then the chances for a young person to attend the church's World Youth Day become even more difficult. This was the message that Ruth Townley, a young Australian Catholic who helped organise one of the exhibitions at the World Youth Day event, wanted to relay to the young pilgrims in Sydney. Ruth has just spent 2 years in northern Uganda, helping to rehabilitate former child soldiers who were held captive by the Lord's Resistance Army rebels. The rebel group abducted thousands of children across northern Uganda, forcing them to either work as porters, sex slaves, or soldiers, and acquired international notoriety for the appalling brutality they used against their young captives. Ruth shared with me her harrowing yet moving experience of working with the former abductees in Uganda.
I was working up in North Uganda, which, as you probably know, has been in civil war for about 20 years. There's been peace talks going on for about 18 months, which perhaps aren't faring so well now. And over the last 2 years, the advent of World Youth Day has been an important sort of point of hope for the Catholic youth there.
I know that when you were in Uganda, you were involved in a rehabilitation program for some of these former child soldiers or sex slaves of the LRA. Can you give us some brief anecdotes of some of the most dramatic or poignant experiences that these young people have gone through?
These children were forcibly taken from their parents and they were abducted into an army and they were forced to do incredible things where conscience is denied and conscience is thwarted, which doesn't mean that their conscience doesn't exist. I remember a young woman who would probably have been about 7 when she was abducted. Often you're not entirely sure of people's ages, and was probably about 14 when she did manage to escape. And on the reunification with her father, I just remember her tears and her distress as she's apologizing to her father for not having escaped prior to that, and the shame and the guilt that she felt for not escaping. And when she explained why she hadn't done it for so many years, because the other children in her cell, if they tried to escape, if recaptured, were hung by their feet from trees, and the other children in the cell, so in the unit, would be forced to take bites out of this child until the child died. And so despite knowing that she was in a terrible situation and she utterly did not want to be doing those things, the fear of experiencing that was powerful enough that she couldn't escape.
What were some of the other terrible things that she was made to do, or that were fairly typical experiences, unfortunately, for these abductees?
These experiences are very typical. So brutality becomes a way of life. You take essentially good human beings, which the vast majority of us are, and you place us in untenable situations, and the perpetrators deliver brutality, and the people who experience that become part of that brutality. And so everybody exists in this milieu of brutality and of violence.
How many of them do bear lasting psychological scars as a result of their terrible experiences?
What I have observed is that human beings are amazingly resilient creatures. We have a depth for compassion and a depth for love that is truly phenomenal in the face of absolutely horrendous experiences. The fact that North Uganda still has loving, caring communities that do their level best to look after each other is an incredible testament to our capacity to endure and to love, and that's despite the scars that they bear. Whether you were abducted or whether you were not abducted, because everybody has someone in their family who was taken into the rebels. Everybody bears the scars of that. Everybody is sort of swimming in this aftermath and still trying to negotiate family and still trying to negotiate community.
And how many of these former abductees were Catholic or other Christian denominations, and how does their faith help them in overcoming the trauma of their experience with the LRA?
Faith plays a very important part in it. Faith seems to help people. We search for reasons. All of us, when we experience tragedy, we search for reasons. Why did that happen? Why should I continue to hope? Why should I try to bring children into this world? And faith enables people to keep doing that, to keep trying to forgive. Forgiveness, to give forgiveness, you can want to forgive, but you still have the nightmares. You still have the fear when you see somebody that you know did those things. You have the fear of yourself because you know that you did those things. You left people behind. People in your family died. And faith provides a support and a strength and a courage. It can help provide an answer, and it can help bring comfort to say, I don't know the reasons, but I know it's important to try and hope again tomorrow.
And talking of faith, how easy is it for these former abductees, these youngsters, to forgive their former captors?
I don't know. I know that the communities there have some very beautiful rites of forgiveness and of reconciliation, but traditionally there, the ritual of forgiveness is an ongoing process. If you do something terrible to me, I can't in one moment say, okay, I forgive you. Because forgiveness involves letting go of that chain of anger and hatred that binds me to you. And that can't happen in a moment. It takes a process where there's a long period of time where I'm very angry and I'm very, very hurt. And perhaps the perpetrator isn't in the slightest bit sorry. And so you can't have a single moment of forgiveness. It takes time. And even after the act of saying, I forgive, it still takes time after that. Forgiveness is an effortful thing. And I sometimes there's not a point where you can say forgiveness is achieved, because when the level of damage is that great, you have to do it over time.
Talking of the captors, in many cases, they were pretty young themselves. I mean, how many of them were on drugs? Was that partly what helped explain what made them indulge in such appalling brutality?
Well, appalling brutality doesn't happen in a vacuum. If a child is abducted and that child is put through a time of initiation where they are forced to do increasingly violent things, that's teaching them values, that's teaching them ways of survival, and slowly over time, they become the perpetrators of that. So it's not as simple as saying these were the captors, these were the people who did the capturing and the killing, because most of them came through that same system of violence and of hatred themselves. They were as much the victims as they were the perpetrators.
How do you go about trying to rehabilitate these youngsters? What sort of programs do you provide?
That's an interesting question. The heart of it is attempting to provide love, which is a bit of a trite answer because there's also a lot of really hard work involved in that. I was running a few programs, one of which was a youth group that used drama to explore ways of living peacefully, ways of living without alcohol, ways of living in the family and in the community without violence. And the youth were absolutely incredible. They taught me even more than I could have hoped to teach them. And we had an incident last year where two of the girls in the program were assaulted by three boys who were not part of our program. This was witnessed by some of the male youth in the group who actually gave chase, caught the juvenile offenders and held them until the adults arrived, which is a phenomenal achievement in itself because they caught the boys, and they didn't beat them up. They didn't hurt them. They simply held them. And we put the girls who were assaulted and their family members and the juvenile offenders and their family members and the boys who caught the offenders and their family members through a restorative justice process where meetings one-on-one, meetings in small groups, and then eventually bringing everybody involved together over time and just continuing to talk about how we can reconcile this situation without resorting to violence. That was a very fraught and quite dangerous situation for a while. And we came out at the end of it where the offenders actually joined our program, voluntarily became part of our group, because in their words, they said, you know, it's quite something. It's quite something to not beat each other up. So the way of rehabilitating people, rehabilitating young people, is to draw on the strengths that they have.
Now, what about the parents? There's so many parents, of course, who were robbed of their children, who were abducted by these soldiers of the LRA. What's their role here, and how easy is it for the former abductees to regain a meaningful relationship with their parents? Do their parents sometimes want to reject them?
I'm thinking about one particular example of parents reuniting with their children. There was a few boys who had come out of the bush. So to come out of the bush means to leave the rebel army, which is an incredibly courageous thing to do. And I was there when this mother met with her boy, who she hadn't seen in years, and she had thought that he was dead. And it turns out he's alive, and she knows that he's done horrendous things. You could see the fear on her face, and you could see the fear in him. And you could say they danced around each other, not physically, but through the looks, through the words that they use. They recognize the other, but they're both very, very afraid. And I think it was the next morning, there was a moment she sat next to him, and he was having trouble fixing his hair. And she reached out to smooth his hair down with her fingers, and then she caught herself, and she just stopped just with her hand above his head. And she looked at him for a moment, and he just looked back at her. And then she did. She touched his hair, and she smoothed it down. Parents don't stop loving their kids.
I was speaking there to Ruth Townley about her experience of helping to rehabilitate former child soldiers in northern Uganda.